The Takeaway is supported by the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable development in communities across the country. More at rockfound.org. You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
It became a movement, but it began as an album, CD and vinyl. Sounds like, no, smells like Teen Spirit. Nirvana's sound changed the world. It's hard to believe that that song that my 10-year-olds play in their own band these days blasted onto the pop scene 20 years ago. Never mind, and it's hard to turn away from the mainstream, interrupted the regularly scheduled pop scene, which sounded so last century back in 1991. Everything I do it for. Nirvana had thrived in the underground Seattle club scene, but Nevermind launched a band and the genre of grunge. It was both a return to the raw intensity of rock and roll and a step into the void of lead singer Kurt Cobain's personal darkness. Grunge had a bleakness about the world that belied the perky 90s. Oh yeah, Nirvana begat the indestructible Pearl Jam and other bands. Grunge has never lost its economic viability over the last 20 years, even though it has been upstaged in the pop world. Kurt Cobain died in 1994 at a moment when he and his band were far from the underground and had become one of the biggest concert acts in the world. Nirvana's remaining artists formed the successful Foo Fighters, but no album has had anything close to Nevermind's impact. Two people join us to talk about perhaps the least aptly named album in music history, Nevermind, 20 years later. Ben Ratliff is music critic for our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
And Steve Kandel is editor-in-chief at Spin Magazine. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
Steve, just to run down the impact Nevermind had on you and the impact you think this album and Cobain and Company had on the world of pop music.
Well, you know, I think I was about 19 or 20 at the time, so I was probably, you know, right down the middle, like target of someone who had listened to a certain thing, you know, growing up in the suburbs, and then, you know, sort of heard this, and it kind of felt like a kick down a door a little bit. So I sort of feel like even the way I sort of was introduced to it and what came after seems like as good a surrogate as for, you know, for how it sort of how people reacted to it writ large.
So, you know? Steve, you buy the hype. You're there.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think a lot of things get pegged to this album itself, where sometimes I think that the album was great and it's an amazing album, but I think a lot of the things that get pegged, you know, around Nevermind were things that were sort of already kind of happening anyway and sort of already bubbling to the surface, and this kind of did kick the door down, but, you know, it could have possibly been something else, too.
And of course, the club scene in Seattle was way ahead of the mainstream in this one, that's for sure. Ben Ratliff, music critic for our partner, The New York Times, what's your assessment?
Well, I think that every time I listened to Nevermind, and even, you know, and the first time I heard it, too, I just felt great surprise, because I didn't really sense this was a band that was going to do this, you know? I mean, it's a record of really good songs with a really good drummer.
Well, let's listen to one of them. This is track 5 on Nevermind, and if you know, actually, why don't you see if you can guess what the name of this track is.
I'm so happy, 'cause today found my friends in my head. I'm so ugly, that's okay, 'cause so are you.
Yehuda, our listener in Brooklyn, got it right. He told us on Facebook, I heard it during my first year of high school and felt so uncool in not getting it, but learning guitar a year or two later and trying then to figure out the ins and outs of songs like Lithium that you're listening to not only gave me a newfound respect for Kurt's songwriting skills, but also gained a lifelong fan for the band. Steve Kandel, that is typical of Cobain's darkness. What do you make of Nevermind and the sort of inner workings of Cobain's brain?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that does nail it. It's like, you know, it's a single called Lithium, and it's definitely sort of like going into that kind of psyche. But like, you know, it also had this kind of sheen to it, and there were these like sort of big poppy shout along choruses. And I think it was the collision of those two things, which maybe people take for granted now. But yeah, I mean, I think that was the thing that really jarred people at the time, to sort of jump around and smile and, you know, and sort of feel excited and happy about a song that was about as pitch black as you could possibly get.
That's Steve Kandel, editor-in-chief at Spin Magazine. We're talking about Nevermind because it's been 20 years today since the album came out. Ben Ratliff, music critic for our partner, The New York Times. You know, I wonder if Nevermind, to a certain extent, has been weighted down with all the legends and high praise that it has yielded since Kurt Cobain died, that perhaps the mystique and the legend has in some ways overshadowed the music.
Well, I think that he was a properly romantic figure in that he was suspicious of sort of almost everybody. I mean, he was suspicious of punk rock philosophy taught him to be suspicious of, you know, anybody in power. But I think he was suspicious of even people who seemed to be on his own side. And so for that kind of person to be like a worldwide rock star is a... You know, that's very intriguing.
And toxic for Cobain in the end. Steve Kandel, what does Dave Grohl think of he was the drummer for Nirvana. What does he think looking back on those days?
I mean, I think he looks back at it kind of fondly. I mean, I think for him to sort of draw the line between, you know, what was going on and really sort of a very intense and accelerated period to, like, where he is now, I mean, I think, you know, romantic is the right word in some ways. I think there's a lot of things that he looks back on in that and sort of, you know, he talks about, like, you know, being able to go to, you know, Benihana and realizing, like, he could actually, like, use a credit card and it would work. I mean, it was really there, you know, the view from inside all of that, I think, was very different from
those good old days.
Yeah,
boy, no,
you know,
kidding.
I mean, I think just 20, to be in the middle of that was a very intense and strange thing.
20 years ago today, Nevermind was released. If Nirvana was the romantics, Foo Fighters, I guess, are the technicians. 20 years ago, the album was released. Steve Kandel, editor-in-chief at Spin Magazine, and Ben Ratliff for The New York Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.